Welcome to Layer Zero. Layer Zero is a podcast of unscripted conversations with the people that make up the Ethereum community. Ethereum is built by code, but it's composed by people, and each individual member of the Ethereum community has their own story to tell. Cypherpunks understood that the code they write impacts the people that use it. And Layer Zero is a podcast that focuses on the people behind the code, because Ethereum is people all the way down, and it always has been. Today, I'm talking with Anthony Cesano, and I always joke that Anthony, he would submit his own soul as a PR request to Ethereum if he had the chance. Anthony does 5 30-minute YouTube videos a week and 5 articles a week, all about updates and thoughts about the Ethereum ecosystem on his daily Gwei newsletter and YouTube channel. In today's conversation with Anthony, we talk about what he finds meaningful about working for a decentralized protocol. How does he find purpose in working for Ethereum? This leads to a conversation about values and working towards something greater than oneself, and ultimately finishes with a broader conversation about why humans form tribes, join organized teams, and rally around symbols. When something like Ethereum promises to be around for countless generations, being a part of the early bootstrapping phase provides Anthony with immense purpose in his life, and why he has an unceasing amount of energy to help promote the best of what the space has to offer. While I've only met Anthony in real life once, he is a close friend of mine, and it couldn't be more obvious that he's here in crypto for the right reasons. So without further ado, let's go ahead and get right into the conversation with Anthony Cesano. But first, a moment to talk about some of these fantastic sponsors that make the show possible. Bankless is proud to be supported by Uniswap. Uniswap is a new paradigm in asset exchange infrastructure. Instead of a cumbersome order book system where trades are matched with other humans, Uniswap is an autonomous piece of software on Ethereum, which is what Ryan and I call a money robot. No human counterparties or centralized intermediaries, just autonomous code on Ethereum. Input the token you want to sell and receive the token you want to buy. Something brand new in the Uniswap ecosystem is the Uniswap Grants program is now accepting applications for grants. We have been saying this for a while and we'll say it again. DAOs have money and they are in need of labor. If you think that you have something to contribute to the Uniswap DAO, apply for a grant to Uniswap. Just look at the size of the Uniswap treasury. It's almost $3 billion. This mountain of capital is looking for labor. Do you have something of value to contribute to the Uniswap DAO? No matter how big or small your idea is, you can apply for a Uni grant at unigrants.org and help steer Uniswap in the direction that you think it should go. That's exactly what we did to get Uniswap to be a sponsor for Bankless, and you can do the same for your project. Thank you, Uniswap, for sponsoring Bankless. Gemini is the world's most trusted cryptocurrency exchange. I've been a customer of Gemini since I first got into crypto in 2017, and it's been my main exchange of choice to make my crypto buys and sells. Gemini is available in all 50 states and in over 50 countries worldwide, and on Gemini there are markets for over 30 various different crypto assets, including many of the hot DeFi tokens, and it's one of the few exchanges that has liquid DAI markets. Gemini just launched their Earn program, where you can earn up to 7.4% interest on 26 various crypto assets. If you're tired of paying fees in DeFi, or you don't want to worry about DeFi exploits, but you still want to earn interest on your crypto assets, Gemini Earn is the product for you. Another product I'm stoked to get my hands on is the Gemini CryptoBack credit card, which gives you 3% cash back on all of your purchases, but paid to you in your preferred crypto asset. When I get my Gemini credit card, I'm going to make sure that I get my cash back in ETH. So whenever I buy something, I get a little bit of ETH bonus back to me at the same time. You can open up a free account in under 3 minutes at gemini.com/gobankless. And if you trade more than $100 within the first 30 days after sign up, you'll be gifted a free $15 Bitcoin bonus. Check them out at gemini.com/gobankless. Hey, Anthony, what's up?
Hey, David, how you going?
Yeah, pretty good, man. Pretty good. Excited to do this.
Yeah, this should be fun. I just actually was listening to the one you did with Justin Drake yesterday, the Layer Zero one you did with Justin Drake. That was quite interesting.
Yeah, it was, wasn't it? It took me a while to get to the actual like Layer Zero part of that conversation because like whenever I've talked to Justin Drake, like we both just want to talk about Ethereum, right? So like It took me a while to get to like the actual part of his lifestyle. But like once we did actually get there, it was like the perfect model for exactly what I wanted Layer Zero to be. It's like, oh yeah, Justin Drake is a rebel. Like he doesn't have any like nation state identity. His kid is like some sort of like fractal off of Ethereum himself. I thought it was a ton of fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it definitely was. I mean, I particularly like the part where he kind of spoke about his changing roles within the Ethereum Foundation and kind of like how he focuses more on the layer zero these days, because, I mean, that's been obvious from his work through kind of like the last 12 months with the Ultrasound Money meme and things like that. But I think the more people at layer zero, the better for Ethereum. We have like a lot of protocol researchers, a lot of people at layer one and layer two, but layer zero seems to be sometimes neglected by people, and they kind of neglect the importance of it and the importance of a really strong social layer for these things. So yeah, it's cool to see kind of like his roles change and kind of he kind of fit into a slot into where he's needed most, I guess.
Mm-hmm. I think that's actually there's some sort of invisible line in the crypto world. It's groups and cohorts and communities and individuals that have made it through a bear market and those that haven't. And I think if you have a crypto system, and you really want to be bullish on it on the long term, like you need to make it through a bear market, right? Like if you're a crypto system and you haven't made it through a bear market, like you are actually like not fully tested in your resiliency and your rigidity, right? And like the concept goes, like at the end of the day, it's the layer zero that supports all of these things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, this is something that I kind of write about and talk about a lot through my work is that, I mean, Vitalik put out an excellent blog post around this where he basically, I can't remember the title of it, but he basically described this and said, you know, you can have all the fancy tech in the world and kind of like all the scalability or whatever you want in the world, but if you don't have a strong social layer to resist attack or resist kind of, I guess, onslaught from competitors or from like nation states and regulators when we get to that point, then you just either kind of like fade into obscurity or you kind of lose the battle there. So, whereas with, I guess, chains like Bitcoin and Ethereum, we have these extremely strong social layers and we fight back. People fight for these things. They fight against the regulators. They fight against FUD online. And yeah, I mean, that falls into having to go through a bear market together because in 2018, 2019, and even parts of 2020, it was a very brutal time for the Ethereum ecosystem, both from a kind of price perspective of ETH, which obviously drove a lot of negative sentiment towards Ethereum, but also from kind of like a use case perspective, because in 2017, Ethereum's main use case was ICO mania. And people were kind of like doing all of that, kind of participating in ICOs. And there was kind of like rumors that ETH2 was going to be delivered end of 2017, which never materialized. And I think, you know, we suffered the fallout of that. We had like a massive hangover during the bear market, but we all came together and we kept, you know, beating on against a really rough current. And we got through it in the end, which was, you know, obviously very positive. Ethereum is now where it is today. And you know, the ETH price has gone up a lot and to reflect that and things like that. But it's not just those kind of things. It's the fact that we now have a very, very strong community who's basically been through the toughest times together and will stick by Ethereum through, you know, thick and thin. It's kind of like Ethereum faces competition from so many different angles these days. But there's a very big reason why, you know, you and I and a lot of other people in the ecosystem stay on the Ethereum track and stay on course. And it's not maximalism. It's literally, this is what we want to see kind of like built. This is what the future we want to see. This is what we want to be a part of. And we've been through all this together. So we understand that, hey, you know, we can get through this. Like, this is not a death knell for Ethereum or for anything else. We can get through this. We can keep building. We can keep innovating. And if you don't have that, and like so many other chains don't, and I'm not talking about the current crop, I'm talking about the old crop of kind of like other blockchains that didn't have this and never built a social layer like this, they've faded into obscurity. No one talks about them anymore. And there will be blockchains, new chains from kind of like this era that fades into obscurity once we go into a longer term kind of bear market. So I think from that perspective, if you take like a long-term view, like you know, we both do, Ethereum is fine. And Ethereum is thriving. It's just that short to medium term, there's a lot of noise and you have to kind of like get through that. And then on the other end, I know Ethereum is going to be there. I even know Bitcoin's going to be there, but I don't know what else is going to be there. I couldn't say that about pretty much anything else at this point.
Right. Yeah. There's the idea that, like, you know, money and profit is made in bull markets, but like it's values that are made in bear markets. And like almost by definition, like, I mean, I didn't sell a single ether at in the 2017 peak or the 2018 peak. And I just watched it like go down to zero. And like at the same time, like I was very much in crypto for profit in 2017, 2018. And then like of course, like I would keep on buying Ether 2018, watch it go down, buy more Ether 2019, watch it go down, buy more Ether, watch it go down. And like, but it was profit motivated, right? Like, I knew the thing was going to resurge, but like, there's still like a difference in people who like tap out of the ecosystem and be like, well, this isn't making me any money. Versus, because like, fundamentally, this ecosystem is about money. Like, it's about a reinvention of money. And so no one can really say that they're not profit motivated, but like, it takes more than just being profit motivated to make it through a bear market, right? Like, you also have to have like long-term convictions in the values as to why you're here in the first place, right? Like, say what you will about Bitcoiners, but like, they have like non-profit motivated beliefs that they truly definitely believe, right? And then always like the profit is the profit motivation is like maybe the energy behind the propagation of those beliefs, but like, it's gotta start with values and beliefs.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, most people come into this ecosystem, if not all, but probably not all, but like almost all people come into this ecosystem with kind of like the goggles on, hey, I'm going to make a bit of money, especially during a bull market, which is fine. Like, there's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with speculation.
It's how crypto is advertised.
Exactly. And we wouldn't get like the kind of like people into this ecosystem that we're seeing right now, the onboarding that we're seeing right now without the profit motivation, which is completely fine. I did the same thing. I came into crypto for money reasons as well. I mean, when I first bought ETH in 2017, I kind of like bought it after reading like one blog post about it. I had kind of known about Bitcoin in 2013, spent some time there, but I remember reading one blog post. I can't remember whose blog post it was, but I read that in early 2017. And then I was like, holy shit, this is awesome. I'm going to buy ETH. And that's it. Like, I didn't know about like the community. I had no involvement in it. I didn't know about the values. I didn't know about why Ethereum was decentralized, whatever. I had no context. I just bought. And then I bought, and I kind of learned all about it. And then really through 2017, I was making multiple bets. I wasn't like that involved with Ethereum to the point where I am today, like nowhere near where I am today. I was making bets on other chains. I even fell into the meme of, oh, NEO is going to be the Ethereum of China. Like, I fell into that meme. NEO, you know what I mean? And then my conviction on Ethereum and kind of like my evangelism around Ethereum only really came to light during the bear market when I wasn't profit motivated anymore. And it was more about, how can I kind of like build up my social capital here? How can I become more involved and see like a brighter future be created? And how do I be at the center of this? So that's going to happen for every chain, I believe. Mm-hmm. But during a bull market, it's kind of hard to separate that signal from the noise. I had someone ask me the other day, hey, like, which chains do you actually think are going to be around? Which has substance? You know, which of these ecosystems are actually going to be long-term kind of sustainable? And I can't answer that right now because it's just, there's too much noise. Obviously, as I said, Ethereum and Bitcoin are obviously are guaranteed to be around, but the other ones I just don't know just yet. Even some of the really popular ones that are getting a lot of attention right now. I mean, this was the same in 2017. Most of them, it's the same thing. They got attention because the price went up. And over the bear market, they failed to build out an actual ecosystem, and they were basically relegated to the history book. So from that perspective, I'm just going to wait and see how it all plays out. I don't know when a long-term bear market's going to hit, if it ever does, considering how much adoption we're seeing and how kind of ingrained crypto is becoming within kind of like normal society, I guess, or non-crypto society. But I guess when I look at these other things and evaluate them, I always look at the social layer. And if the social layer doesn't kind of like appeal to me or kind of like the community doesn't appeal to me, I just won't get involved with it. And the tech's just secondary to that. And usually the tech is what dictates the social layer as well at the end of the day, because you'll see within Bitcoin, because Bitcoin is such a limited technology, it actually lends itself to a limited viewpoint, and that attracts a limited kind of set of people, those being kind of the libertarian digital gold bug type, like anti-government type. Whereas with Ethereum, you have a much more expressive kind of technology, and that lends itself to a much more expressive community. And then other chains have their own kind of things that they're trying to do and attracts different kinds of people. So at the end of the day, just like you wouldn't hang out with people that don't share your similar interests in real life, you're not going to hang out with the people who don't share your similar values and interest on you know, in crypto. It's the same kind of concept to me.
I want to ask a question on a similar like line of thought, line of reasoning, but from a completely different angle. So you do the Daily Gui, which is one newsletter every single day. You don't do it on the weekends, right?
A newsletter every weekday and a YouTube video, you know, recapping Ethereum every weekday. Yeah. Weekends.
Right. Not week. So you take weekends off. Good for you.
Every second weekend, because on Saturdays I do an AMA, two-hour AMA in the Discord channel. And I wouldn't say I take the weekend off. I would say I take the weekend to catch up on emails.
Okay, so perfect. That's great context. You do a YouTube video, 30 to 40-minute YouTube video every single day. You write a blog post every single day. Every other weekend you do an AMA. And then you also fill up your time with like all this other Ethereum stuff. And like the impressive thing about like the daily Gwei is like not only the level of consistency, I don't think you've missed a single one, but also like your consistent level of energy while doing the damn things, right? So like, where the hell does this come from, man? Like, why?
I the funny thing is I often surprise myself. I sometimes, you know, catch myself and I'm like, how am I still so involved with this ecosystem? How have I not got bored of it? How have I not burnt out? How do I do this? Like, I ask myself these questions and really, I only ever really come back to one answer. It's just that I have such a passion for everything that I do, for Ethereum, for this ecosystem, and the passion for changing the world, I guess, and being a big part of that. That's what keeps me motivated. But it's also a purpose thing. Like, it gives my life purpose. And I mean, to get a bit personal here, since this is layer zero, I struggled for a very long time personally, especially through my teenage years and early 20s, with depression and with a lot of different mental issues and stuff like that. And I had paranoia. I had I was very stressed, very anxious about a lot of things. I kind of was just like down in the dirt about a lot of things. And I think now looking back at it, it was because I just didn't feel like I had a purpose. I felt like I was just aimless. I didn't know what I wanted to do. I felt like I had a group of friends that were kind of the same. We would just hang out and do nothing, like just talk shit, like at McDonald's and, you know, eat junk food. And that was another part of it as well. My diet was shocking. So that added to it. I was overweight and it just like really overweight. And it was just like really, really bad. I kind of put myself into like a super bad headspace that kept compounding over time. And it just kept getting worse and worse. And then, as I said, like I discovered Bitcoin in 2013. I got pretty involved in terms of like passionate about it, learning about it and everything, but it was mainly profit driven. Like I was super excited because I was young. I was like, oh my God, I'm gonna make so much money.
You wanted to understand what you were invested in.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, I rode the wave up from like $100. I bought my first Bitcoin to like $1,000 or whatever the all-time high was back then. Then MT Gox collapsed and so did the price of BTC and I sold at like $400 or something. So I still made a little bit of a profit, but I had traded away a lot of things because I fell for the scams and the pump and dumps, of course, as you do. But then through there, I guess like I didn't come back into the ecosystem until Ethereum in early 2017. But between like 2014 and 2017, I was still in that aimless kind of thing where I was doing a bunch of different stuff. I started some companies. Like, it's funny. I started like a clothing company where we did like t-shirts. It was like very, very kind of like weird stuff. I had like a company where we did beard oils and things like that, which I guess makes more sense for me. But
I did not. That's a fun fact right there.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think for what I was trying to do back then, I was still trying to look for my purpose, right? And something that I could actually put my energy towards and feel happy about and feel accomplished about that and would actually make me feel happy. And they did. There was briefs of brief happiness there, but there was no profits made. I had co-founders that were really kind of like to work with. They weren't really pulling their weight and stuff like that. And then I joined like so in between this time, the way I was making money is I was a freelance web designer as well, just doing like, it wasn't anything complex. I was doing like WordPress websites for kind of local businesses. And then in 2016, kind of like towards the end of 2016, I joined a telecommunications company as a cybersecurity analyst. And this was shift work. But I didn't mind because I was already pretty shitty with my sleeping pattern anyway. And I'd kind of like stay up to all hours, whatever. I was a big gamer through this as well. Played a lot of World of Warcraft, especially in my earlier years. But and then from there, that gave me purpose as well. Like I felt really happy. Like I felt like my life had actually turned for the positive. I was making good money, you know, considering kind of like it was an entry level role, and everyone was like super nice. But over time, given it's a huge corporate kind of company, that kind of weighed down on things. You kind of discover, wow, okay, this is what corporate work is like. It's really, really shit. You're a cog in the machine.
Right.
Yeah, it's a grind. You're a cog in the machine. There's really the only end game is to become a manager. And kind of like, that's it. And I, looking at all the managers there, I didn't want to become a manager ever. Like it looked like the worst possible job ever. It doesn't matter how much money there was. It wasn't even that much money compared to what crypto gives you, right? But it wasn't even about the money. It was about the kind of like the purpose and passion. But I think when I discovered Ethereum and I guess like the fast forward through all the years, that's what finally kind of made me feel like I actually belonged somewhere and I could actually create like a kind of purpose for myself within Ethereum. And that's why I kind of like have tried so hard and worked so hard through the years to get to where I am today. And what keeps me going is because The thing I'm most scared of is becoming irrelevant, kind of like falling into the history books and just becoming a footnote in this revolution. I want to be at the forefront of it. I want to continue to be at the forefront of it for as long as it takes, and until we reach like global adoption where I don't matter anymore because there's so many people that are involved with it. I still want to be that. And I think that is what kind of like drives me the most. So all that previous context, all that build up and me remembering all of that personally is what keeps me going and keeps me doing this, because I really don't want to become irrelevant. I really don't want to become kind of just someone who sits in the corner and, hey, that guy used to be a cool Ethereum dude. Now he doesn't really do anything. He made money and now he's just kind of gone away. It's funny because I made enough money to quit working full time at Set and kind of sustain myself now. And the thing is, I actually just ended up working more because right. It's never been about the money. Besides that at the start when it was profit driven, once you have the money, this is what a lot of people don't understand. It's like once you have the money, like there's only a marginal increase from getting more money. And if you're not materialistic, I know I have a lot of crap around me, but like, I don't.
It's like only this right behind the camera, he promises. It's only what the camera can see.
Yeah, yeah. And I buy these things or whatever, but like, I don't have a sports car, like a supercar. I don't have like fancy clothes or anything. Like this is like a cheap top from like some kind of like, I don't even know where I bought it from. It's and stuff like that. So I'm not like super materialistic like that. So I don't think people realize that it's just like a marginal difference once you have the money. And from there on, you want purpose. You want a kind of like reason to continue doing what you're doing. And that's always been the case for me. The money was a means to an end to sustain myself, to be able to do this work. So I think that taking all that into context and taking all that as kind of like a holistic thing is what keeps me going and what keeps my passion burning. But again, I still surprise myself because I've been doing this nonstop since 2017. And I've just increased my workload and I still wake up every day just super charged, super kind of like motivated to get at it and do what I can to keep growing myself and growing Ethereum. So yeah, maybe that's like the much needed kind of backstory and context to that question.
So, I'm a fan of the parallel universes theory where there's like multiple universes and each one's a little bit different. And so there's some universe out there where like Anthony is actually like a Bitcoiner, or Anthony is, you know, equally passionate about something unrelated, veganism or something else. So why Ethereum? Like, why did this Anthony pick Ethereum to be passionate about?
Yeah. I mean, it's an interesting question because there's also a parallel universe where I was like a fan of another chain, right? Or something like EOS or like NEO or something where I still was like in the dirt there. But I think the number one thing for me with Ethereum that keeps me so involved and why I've stuck with it for so long is, I mean, there's a few different things, but I think the number one thing is that it's freedom in its most purest form, I believe. And I've said this before and I've written about it being Ethereum is freedom. And this is because Ethereum to me is the only platform right now in terms of smart contract platform, and I think will continue to be the only one where it is truly, truly decentralized, where there are kind of like, I guess, I wouldn't call them central points of failure, but there are parties within the ecosystem that have more kind of like influence than others. But if we look at the ecosystem holistically and what it is today, it is truly decentralized, which means it lets anyone build whatever they want on it. Right, anyone can transact on it. There's kind of like no, it's censorship resistant, and it's like expressive. So because of the smart contract language and everything like that, and capabilities, and that attracts a certain type of person, a certain type of builder. And they're ideological about it because there's not really any shortcuts being taken. People are trying to do things the right way, where they're trying to kind of. I mean, it's funny because the perfect example of this is what happened with the ETH2 beacon chain, for example. This took many, many years of research and development to get to where we are today, but I truly do think that the Beacon Chain is the best proof of stake implementation that has ever been kind of like conceived. It is absolutely amazing how elegant the design is and how open it is as well. I know that there's a 32 ETH minimum requirement to validating. That is there per the design spec, and that can be lowered in the future, but it requires a kind of a few changes there. But in saying that, you can still validate it, with these decentralized services that can be built on top. There's also others like Rocket Pool, and there's also other services like SSV, which is basically being able to kind of like, I guess you could call it delegate your stake but keep your keys, which I think is really elegant as well, a really elegant way of doing delegated staking as opposed to delegated proof of stake, which is kind of like a bit different there. But essentially, that is kind of like the I guess like the culmination of everything I love about Ethereum is that we didn't take shortcuts. We didn't rush it. We didn't kind of like say, hey, we have to get this out because the market is like heating up and we need to pump ETH. Like that's never been a goal of Ethereum's core development. It's always been, we're going to ship it when it's ready and when we're happy with it, and we're not going to rush it to market. And that's the same with the layer two ecosystem. That's the same with sharding. It's the same with all of the major upgrades. Like look at 1559. That thing actually is, you know, half designed to be an ETH value accrual mechanism, right? Like it's an ETH pump thing. Like if you want to be crude with the language, it still took over 2 years to get it into the network. So from that perspective, the core development is actually doing it right and doing it slowly and not taking any shortcuts. Whereas a lot of the other kind of like ecosystems, they take shortcuts, especially to scale. They're like, you know, we're going to scale by doing this and then we'll decentralize later. It's like, I don't like that. I like decentralization first, focus on the virtues of decentralization, of kind of like freedom, of letting anyone kind of do whatever they want on this platform, of being kind of like focused on the long-term aspect of this technology rather than the short-term. And that all lends itself back to, you know, Ethereum being freedom, because anyone can do what they want, but no one's taking shortcuts from what I see. Some of the apps built on top are, you know, taking shortcuts, whatever. Like there's a lot of scams and stuff like that. But if you look at the actual core development of the technology, it's taken so long because we haven't taken those shortcuts, and it will continue to take long. And I'm in this for the long-term, so why would I go focus on the short-term kind of things rather than the long-term stuff? Kind of like that's a bit of a synopsis around. I mean, this conversation could go on forever, and the answer to that question could go on forever. But really, at the end of the day, I just feel like Ethereum aligns most with my values of kind of like freedom, making sure that anyone can kind of like participate in an ecosystem with the strongest guarantees of security and decentralization and censorship resistance, rather than and actually, I think this is an important point, and then I'll stop rambling here. I think the important point is that, because the Ethereum ecosystem is focused on the long term and focused on resisting kind of like the last boss, which is nation states, that's what everything's being built for. Whereas these other ecosystems, I don't see them doing this. They're building for scale now at the kind of like by sacrificing decentralization, and that works in most cases. But when your enemy, your final boss, is a nation state who is going to try and take you down because they don't want you doing this, then you need that kind of like level of assurance and level of decentralization and security. And it's really only then that you kind of like test these things in their full capacity. And to me, that's what I want to kind of work towards. I don't want to, because you can imagine, like, if I was involved in another ecosystem for 5 years and they weren't really decentralized, they weren't really secure, but they were scalable and whatever, and then in 5 years they kind of like get extreme regulatory pressure, they get basically shut down essentially, like for all intents and purposes, then what was the point? Like that previous 5 years meant nothing. Like that the accumulation of all that work meant nothing. Whereas with Ethereum, I can have near certainty, it's not always certain, but near certainty and a lot of confidence that Ethereum can survive basically anything as a network because of that decentralization, because anyone can run a full node, anyone can validate the network, anyone has a copy of the chain, and anyone can validate on the network as well. That to me is essentially the crux of it, is that I'm not building for something that can kind of like go about its life for 5 years and then die. I'm building for something that can, I'm involved with trying to build something that can resist everything and kind of like, I mean, one of the design goals of ETH2 was to be World War III resistant. So even if the whole world goes to shit, we can still have this network kind of running, or at least have copies of this network around that we can bootstrap it again once the kind of like war is over, for lack of a better kind of term there. So that's what I guess like attracts some of the stuff that attracts me to Ethereum so much.
Yeah, you took the transition right out of my mouth, so I'm gonna go with that. So Ethereum is World War III resistant. If everything goes according to plan, it will be here until we die, and then beyond that. So, like, what are you going to do? Are you just going to do daily Gwei, like, newsletters and YouTube videos until, like, you can't talk anymore? Like, is that the plan? What's the plan?
I mean, it's funny because, actually, this falls into something else I forgot to mention. So I had a like plan for myself in early 2018, not so much 2017. Once the bear market hit, I was like, because the reason why I exited Bitcoin in 2014, I guess, is because the bear market hit. I was profit motivated. Mm-hmm. Worst mistake of my life. Missed the ETH ICO. Missed everything else. You know, missed out on kind of like all of that and all of that growth of the early days, and missed Ethereum until early 2017, which now seems like an eternity ago. But back then, it was kind of like, okay, I need to stick around this time. And when the bear market hit, I was like, I need to stick around. I need to make sure that I can basically make a name for myself. You know, I know what happens. Like, these things work in cycles. I'll just keep investing and I'll be good in a few years. I had no certainty of this. It was just kind of like a bet that I was making. And that was kind of like a plan that I had from early 2018. I'm like, I'm going to do this for as long as I need to get to where I want to be. And then we'll kind of like figure out once I get there what my next kind of thing is. And I still haven't figured out what my next long-term thing is. Like, I'm doing the Daily Gwei and stuff, and I'm going to keep doing that for the foreseeable future. Same with like the ETH Hub stuff and all that kind of stuff. But generally, I don't have like another grand vision. Like, I don't know kind of like what I want to do into the future. I know what I'm doing now, but it's kind of like been a weird thing for me lately where I've been like, okay, I achieved the goals that I set out for myself back in 2018. So where do I go from here? And that was kind of like that spurred the Daily Gwei, but I kind of view the Daily Gwei as kind of like more of a, like, I don't know if I call it a hobby, but it's more of a kind of thing where I'm giving back to the ecosystem through it because it's all free and I don't really monetize it or anything like that. And it's kind of like a diary for me as well to kind of like keep track of what's going on in the ecosystem. But generally, I don't have like that long-term goal now. So I would say like for the foreseeable future, I'll be doing the Daily Gwei, and I don't plan to stop that. I don't really want to stop doing that at all. Like, as I said, like I'm still very passionate about it, and I don't want to kind of like stop being, and I don't think I'm going to stop being passionate about it for the foreseeable future. But there may come a day where I'm just kind of like, okay, well, you know, this may not be the best use of my time. Maybe I should focus on something else. And I've been thinking about that as well. I had ideas around, you know, maybe trying to help people kind of like find jobs within crypto, starting like a not-for-profit kind of like job agency or something like that. But even that, like, I mean, it's just kind of like, where's the best use of my time right now? And I think that I'm doing pretty much everything that I consider to be the best use of my time, because not only do I do the Daily Gwei, but I do a lot of stuff behind the scenes as well. Like, I talk to a lot of different teams. Like, I do a lot of angel investing. I advise a lot of projects. I talk to a lot of people all the time. So I think it's funny because like I'm both content with what I'm doing now and feel like I'm doing the best that I can be doing, but also I have this nagging voice at the back of my head being like, hey, you could be doing more. Like, there could be right. something grander that you could be doing. But I haven't exactly kind of figured out what that is just yet.
Yeah, one of Eric Conner's metaphors that he's given, I think he put this out on Twitter, is like Ethereum is like this this blob thing, which was a reference to this 1950s horror movie about, it was terrible apparently, never watched it, but it was this blob that ever expanding, ever like invasive, ever growing, and like I talk to Ryan about just being absolutely drained with like what we do at Bankless, and like it's like, if you let it, Ethereum will like invade every single point of your life, and like you'll lose touch with your former self, and you'll only be your Ethereum self. But like with you, you actually seem to like gain energy with Ethereum, like, you know, injecting itself into your brain. And so like it's kind of weird. It's kind of funny just to notice like everyone else, like we all get excited about Ethereum. Everyone gets excited about Ethereum, but like, it just, you just don't stop. It's just like, oh, you're like, oh, I please absorb me, blob. Like, take all of me and take it all.
Yeah. I mean, I think for me, the reason why I get more energy as time goes on and as Ethereum gets bigger is because I worked so hard during 18, 19, and 2020, and even to this day, to get to where Ethereum is today, to see this mass adoption happening, to see all these things coming to life, to see the Beacon Chain go live, to see Layer 2 rollout happening. And the fact that I've been kind of talking about this stuff for so long and kind of promote it and kind of trying to kind of like usher it along, and the fact that it's finally happening just motivates me even more and gives me more energy. It just kind of like it charges me up every single day when I see these things. And the amazing thing is that I used to think me being kind of like in the time zone that I'm in Australia was a curse, because I slept during kind of like the peak of crypto, because the US, it wakes up when I sleep, and Europe's still awake and everything like that. But then I realized it was a blessing, because I get to wake up and I get to catch up on everything that happened overnight, which is an amazing kind of like boost to my day or start to my day, where it's like 2 to 3 hours of catching up on all the chats, catching up on Twitter, on all the emails and things like that, and everything that's happened. And I get to kind of like just experience a whole world all at once, like every single morning.
Oh, like, you get like 8 hours of chatting, but you get to consume it in like 2 hours or even less. Oh, exactly. That's interesting.
Exactly. And that like literally charges me up. It's amazing. Like I come to my computer and I look at everything. I'm like, okay, where do I start? Like, oh my God, there's so much stuff to do right now. And you know, there are certain days where it's crazier than others. Like when some massive launch has happened, DeFi summer was particularly pretty crazy where I'd wake up and it's like, okay, Yam's launched. Okay. Wi-Fi is launched. Okay. This is launched. You know, where's the latest kind of food farm? And then I'd message my friends and I'd be like, hey, you know, is this safe? Do I ape in and stuff like that? But outside of that, there's also the tech stuff. Like Arbitrum went live while I was sleeping and I woke up. I'm like, yes, Arbitrum's live. Let's go try it out. Let's see what's happening. Let's see what people are saying about it. And it's because I've been, and what makes it even more exciting when things kind of like go live or where kind of like updates happen is that I talk about it for so long. Like we've spoken about 1559 since day one. Right, like Eric is a co-author of the AIP. We spoke about it for a very long time. Not just Eric and I, but like you and the rest of kind of like the ETH core people that everyone probably knows by now. But we spoke about this for so long through different market cycles, through different sentiment cycles, and to finally see it go live, I don't think people that don't have that context would realize just how amazing of a feeling that was and how kind of like, not just that, the Beacon Chain going live. I spoke about ETH2. I mean, I'd known about ETH2 and staking for such a long time and that went live. And, you know, coming up is the merge as well. That's going to be huge. We have all the layer twos. I mean, I've been talking about layer two or thinking about it since day one of this ecosystem because people have been talking about it since then. And rollups were kind of relatively new, but still, talking about that, seeing them go live and actually work and do what they, you know, we've been talking about for so long, especially as someone who writes about it every bloody day and does videos about it every day, to actually see it materialize, dude, it's like it's a feeling that's just like unmatched, really. Mm-hmm. And I think that is kind of you know, what gives me that energy and what kind of keeps me going and why my energy actually goes up with the crazier this ecosystem gets. And also because I know if I take a day off, I miss everything. Like, there's no days off in this industry. Like, and that may not sound appealing to a lot of people because they want to take a day off, they want to recharge. But I have a pretty good system now where I can take time off during kind of like my afternoon and my evening because everyone's asleep. This is the beauty of my time zone as well, is that once I'm done, like by 2, 3 p.m., you know, I have some lunch, I'll go for a bike ride, I'll spend some time with my fiance, I'll watch some kind of shows, maybe play some games. It's like a cool down period for a little bit. And then towards the evening, I'll do my newsletter. I actually like pick the topic and write my newsletter within an hour at like 10 p.m. And then I'll record the refuel. I'll do all that. And then at the same time, the US is waking up. So I'll kind of like multitask. I'll do that. And I'll start talking to friends and things like that. And I'll see Twitter get more active. And then I go to bed at like 2 a.m. or something like that, right in the, I guess, the peak of the US. But then I'm like, okay, well, I go to bed now. I'll wake up and everything's going to be, you know, awesome
waiting
again.
For
so,
you, yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah, yeah. And it's funny because like I had never experienced what it was like to basically live in the US time zone until August 2019 when I went to see the SET team after I joined SET in July of 2019. And it was completely different. I didn't like it. I hated it. I woke up and there was nothing. Like I was sat there and I'm like, nothing happened. Like, what the hell? Like, where's all the updates? And it'd just be boring. So I'm actually, and this is another reason, people ask me, like, why don't you move to a more favorable time zone or why don't you move somewhere else? It's like, I don't think that's more favorable than what I have now. Like, I don't think I'd be able to do what I do without the kind of routine that I have now. It's just, it's awesome. Like, really. And I don't know, there's a lot, probably some Australians that will listen to you and even Asia as well, a similar time zone that will probably know what I'm talking about. But for anyone who has never experienced kind of like the time zone thing, you just don't know how awesome it is to wake up to just like a flood of information and get to absorb it. Because, I mean, for personally, this is how I learn as well. I overload my brain with things, like to the point where I need to basically keep just like reading stuff over and over again and overloading my brain with the same information to get to a point. I'm not a structured learner. I can't just sit there and read something and be like, okay, I'm going to study this and that I'm going to absorb it. It's kind of like, yes, give me all the information and my brain will make sense of it as time goes on. I don't care. It's just crazy. I mean, I have 6 monitors in front of me and I have information everywhere because I just want all of it fed to me at all times. And maybe that doesn't work for a lot of people, but it works for me. And that's, I think, a big reason why, yeah, the energy can kind of like keep going up as this ecosystem gets crazier.
So one thing I've noticed about you, and like you talked about, like before you got into Ethereum and in your formative years, like you had like, you know, mental health issues like depression, anxiety, and like, you know, issues like that tend to bring along further issues, right? There's like they come in groups, right? Mm-hmm. And like, I also know that you listen to extremely, these are my words, but like violent, like death metal, maybe? Is that the right, mm-hmm. maybe that's the right genre, right? And so like, you sent me a song and it's just like, this guy is like screaming at you and he's like screaming his guitar at you. And then you, like you said, you have like six monitors in front of you. And like you do the Daily Gwei every single day. And then like, when you talk about Ethereum, like you can feel the excitement and feel like, and you want, I can watch your brain try and go in like four different directions at once. And you somehow manage to like hit every single one of them. So like, I think you have like a pretty decent harness on like a pretty good, like manic side of you. And you've been mm-hmm. able to like, corral that and like inject that energy into like, well, okay, I've got the like this like, you know, moderately not too crazy manic side of me, and I'm just gonna be manic about Ethereum. Like, to me, that's kind of like your branding is like Anthony Cezzano, manic about Ethereum.
Yeah, I mean that's actually a perfect way to put it. And you know, it's funny, you've actually hit the nail on the head. That's exactly kind of just what I'm like. Maybe a lot of people aren't like this, where they need to be calm or need to kind of like have a cool down period. I'm just like go, go, go all the time. I need to overload my brain with as much kind of stimuli as possible to be at my best. And that's because my brain's always
begging for it. Just look behind you. Look how many colors there are. There are so many things.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that definitely stems from that. It's just like a constant need to have stuff around me, have things going on. I can't sit still for very long, even when I'm watching kind of like TV shows on my PC or something like that, because I really do love a good story and I love TV shows and love watching stuff. But generally, I just have other stuff going on as well. Like I can't really focus. And maybe that's a little bit of a curse, is that I can't like focus. But, you know, I still think for me, like, and this is exactly actually why it's another issue, is that I have struggled kind of like relating to people, talking to people when it's not talking about something that I want to talk about. Mm-hmm. Like at conferences is amazing because I get to talk about crypto the whole time. But if I go out with like some old friends and we just talk about stuff, within like an hour, I am done, man. Like I am exhausted. Like I'm actually tired from that conversation because it hasn't stimulated me.
You got
it hasn't
drained. Actually you got tired for the first time in your week.
Yeah, exactly. I feel tired. I feel like just bored. I'm just like, wow, okay, this is just like such a waste of time and my brain's just shutting off. And it's really amazing how quickly it happens. So yeah, I mean, you hit the nail on the head. I have like this kind of manic stuff where my brain goes in all these different directions all the time, and I try to piece it together in my brain. Like it's commonly on the refuel, because it's not scripted. It's just like a stream of consciousness. I will commonly have to stop myself and be like, okay, wait, I need to give this context first before I jump to this, because my brain has already gone to the point where I want to be, but I need to kind of slow it down. And that's kind of become
faster than the mouth.
Exactly. And that's kind of become like an acquired skill that I had to kind of like teach myself, because I realized that when I talked to a lot of people, I skipped a lot of much needed context. And that was definitely like a hard part for me to kind of like come to terms with. But I think it's definitely needed. But yeah, it's just funny how it happened, because I don't think I've always been like this. I think it kind of just happened naturally as I looked for more of a kind of like purpose in life and kind of like more of a passion. It's just that I become obsessive with things and I kind of engross myself in them. And if they don't catch my attention, then I just like, I'm not interested at all. And I think this is why right now, like a lot of people kind of tell me stuff and they're kind of like, hey, you can kind of like do this. You could yield farm here. You can make money here. And at this point in time, I'm just not interested in making more money. Like I got to the point where I don't need to kind of like make more money. I can sustain myself. More money's, you know, always fun and whatever. But I don't, that's not the stuff that kind of motivates me anymore. It's not the stuff that makes me passionate anymore. I need the stimuli that actually kind of like wakes my brain up and makes me want to focus on things. So I kind of like tune that stuff out. And for a lot of new people, I don't blame them for wanting to do that. Yield farm, make money, like that's all well and good. But at the end of the day, there's a lot more to life than money.
Right. Yeah, like everyone gets into this industry or even just like gets into their life with like their focus on money, right? Like go through college, graduate college, maybe they don't go to college, whatever. But like you start off life like focusing on money. And like you said at the beginning, like once you have some threshold of money, like having that translate into actual happiness gets harder and harder and harder, right? Like I got myself an apartment that makes me happy, and like I got a fun car. And after that, it's like, well, I guess I could get a like the next thing to like add to my life could be like a boat, I guess. But that was so much more money, and it's not that great. Like I worked on docks when I was young. It was my summer job in college. Maintaining a boat is like a huge pain. So you don't want a boat. You don't want a boat at all. Like no, that's that. Like maybe it's cool, but like the value, the how hard you had to work for it, because like you know boats are orders of magnitude more. And like insert any noun here, right? They're just more orders of magnitude, like more expensive than like the typical things, like an apartment and a car. And then like what you get out of it is actually not that much. And so like you actually have to like reorient your attention if you, because like the whole point of life is to like feel good, right? Like feel good, and however that is done, whether you like are hedonistic and you like drugs, or you're altruistic and you like helping people, the whole point of life is to feel good. And like money only goes so far with that, right? Like diminishing returns hit real, real soon.
Yeah, and I mean this kind of probably a perfect segue into I'm not segue, but like a perfect kind of thing to kind of bring up. Like,
who's the interviewer here?
No. I mean, what you were talking about got me thinking back to like I guess my grand thesis on just life in general, and it's that I believe that we're all born with like a massive hole in ourselves, and we try to fill that hole with things. Right? Different people try to fill it with different things that make them happy, as you said. Some people will fill it with religion. Some people will fill it with money. Some people will fill it with materialistic possessions. Some people will fill it with family and friends, whatever. But there's filling the hole for the short term, and then there's filling the hole for the long term. So you can put short term stuff in there, and that may give you some kind of like very short term happiness and whatever. Like, I'll be honest, some of the stuff that I buy and I'm just like, okay, well, that gave me some happiness, but like, that's not going to sustain me. Like, I can't stare at the stuff that I buy and be like, yes, I'm content with life now. You know what I mean? Like, it's just, and for me, I fill that hole with Ethereum, with crypto, with my work that I do. But other people fill it with other sorts of things. And I think that too many people fill it with short-term stuff and expect that to keep them going, because it, you know, the funny thing is with the short-term stuff is you can keep compounding that, but the thing is you have diminishing returns. You can buy something, short-term happiness. Okay, well, now I've got to buy another thing to get that happiness again. But each time you do it, you have diminishing returns, and that's why I think a lot of people fall into a place where they're depressed, they're sad, they're not even content with life. They're just like aimlessly going through it with no purpose or goal. You know, some people turn to alcohol and drugs as well and get like really bad vices and addictions, and once you fall into that, it's very hard to get yourself out of it. Like, it took me a long time to get myself out of it, to get to lose the weight that I had put on, which is a big factor in it as well. Diet plays a massive factor in this. But to get my headspace right, it took a very long time. And I kept trying to fill it with short-term things. I kept trying to buy new stuff and do things and become obsessive with the wrong things. And it never led to any long-term happiness. It always led to short-term kind of stuff that, you know, while good, while I was experiencing it, I paid the price later for that. Like, I paid the price of you know, just destroying my diet in the fact that I just had really bad mental issues. I looked bad. Trying on clothes was always like really depressing whenever I went shopping, having to go to like the double XL section and just like super, super depressing. There's nothing for free, really. I mean, you kind of like pay the price for your decisions, and you pay the consequences for them. So make better decisions and fill that hole with better long-term stuff that you actually enjoy doing and you can see yourself sustaining over the long term, and you'll be fine. But on the flip side of that, unfortunately, I think a lot of people just don't have that. Like, they just don't have the ability to basically fill that hole with something that's long-term, because they either just don't want to put in the work to do it, or they're probably not fundamentally wired that way. And it's quite sad, because I know a lot of people who are fundamentally not wired in a way where they can actually be passionate about something, or at least as passionate about as I am with Ethereum. And I just think that if you're not like that, then you have to look for other ways to kind of like give yourself long-term happiness. And there's no wrong or right way. It's just the consequences of that. Like, are the consequences good for you, or are they bad for you? Does it lead to more happiness, or does it lead to you know, less happiness? And I think a lot of people fill this hole with having a family, which is totally fine. But like, is that what you actually wanted? Like, is that actually going to lead to long-term, and I'm talking like decades-long happiness, or are you just going to breeze through life and eventually get to your deathbed and look back on your life and be like, wow, like I didn't really do much. And you know, that's, and like, I'm not happy with the way my life went. That is actually something that's very scary to me. I don't want to get to the point where I'm lying there and it's like my final kind of like days, and I kind of look back on my whole life and be like, wow, I did nothing.
What did I do?
Yeah, what did I do? Like, I'm so, and just, you know, I'm just so depressed, so sad. And not just for me, but for, like, everyone around me, they just, you know, everyone that I care about, everyone that cares about me, they kind of look at it and it's like, what did he do? Did he just waste his life away and whatever? And I think, you know, there's some people, there's a lot of people that aren't like that. They're just trying to kind of like, and I think it's like a privileged position to, you know, the funny thing is for a lot of humanity's history, it was not about like this kind of like filling your hole with like these grand goals. It was more like fill that hole with food and water and surviving because you are a farmer and your village is going to get attacked if you don't defend it and stuff like that. And that's true for a lot of the world still today. Like, I'm talking from a privileged first world position, but I also think that the fact that we've kind of like had all that stuff taken care of for us now, a lot of people struggle with that transition because we don't have to worry about surviving in the first world. A lot of us, we don't have to worry about where our food is coming from. We're content with a lot of this stuff. We're fed all this stimuli. We're fed all this kind of all this stuff and all this. We're kind of like babied through life a lot of the time. If you're a first world, if you're middle class, you're babied through life a lot of the time. Honestly, compared to someone in a third world country. So from that.
Shout out stimulus checks.
Yeah, exactly. Stuff like that. You know what I mean? Like, and from that point of view and from that perspective, people just kind of like go into, I think this is why depression and mental kind of like issues are on the rise, is because people just don't know what to do once everything is already done for them. Like, right. they're like, where do I go from here? Like, what is my life? Right. And you really
it's
have
like
to.
It's like the little like, robot from Rick and Morty who asks what his purpose is.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So yeah, exactly. You have to find your own purpose in life. And I think for a lot of people, that is a scary prospect. They don't want to do that. They want to be told what their purpose is, or they want to be able to kind of like know from, I guess, like the get-go what their purpose is. And back in, you know, before modern society, we knew survive. That was the purpose for most of humanity's kind of existence, survive. Now that's being taken out and our primitive brains haven't actually evolved past that. We now still have that inertly within us. Like the goal of humans is to survive and procreate, right? To keep our species going. And that's all taken care of us. And even kind of like procreating is taken care of us. Like there's no need to worry about the baby. You go to a doctor, they tell you what's what. They tell you when you're due. They tell you what's complicated about things. They tell you, you know, if it's dangerous, if you're going to give birth, you might die in childbirth. All that's taken care of. There's no risk anymore. Like there's no kind of like, there's nothing for our brains to latch onto in terms of like fight or flight anymore. It's kind of like, you know, we're just cruising along through life. Everything's taken care of, whatever. And yes, we have our little battles here and there, but it's nothing compared to what it was back in the day. So that's why it leads to, I think, increased depression, increased mental issues, is because a lot of people just don't know how to deal with that.
All right, guys, in the second half of the show, this is actually where things get, in my opinion, really, really interesting. I bring up the concept of Ernest Becker's denial of death theory, which I'll explain in the show. But it's basically a theory as to why people work and join teams, work in governments, work for things that are larger than themselves. And it's an attempt to become immortal, right? We all know that we're going to die. But when we find things that we can create permanence in, object permanence, that are things that are going to live on beyond us, we can actually find meaning in working for those things. And the subconscious fear of death is what motivates people in getting to that point. So I think it's a fascinating conversation that Anthony and I had. But first, before we get there, we have to talk about some of these fantastic sponsors that make this show possible. The Aave protocol is a decentralized liquidity protocol on Ethereum, which allows users to supply and borrow certain crypto assets. Aave version 2 has a ton of cool features that makes using the Aave protocol even more powerful. With Aave, you can leverage the full power of DeFi money Legos, yield, and composability all in one application. On Aave, there are a ton of assets that you can supply to the protocol in order to gain yield, and all of those same assets can also be borrowed from the protocol if you have supplied collateral. One of my favorite Aave features is the ability to select a stable interest rate. Once I've selected a stable interest rate, I'm protected against any interest rate volatility that may happen in DeFi and allows me to plan my DeFi finances for the long term. V2 also features the ability for users to swap collateral without having to withdraw your assets, trade them on Uniswap, and then deposit them back into Aave. With Aave, users can do this in one seamless transaction, saving you time and gas costs. Check out the power of Aave at aave.com. That's AAVE.com. Balancer is a powerful platform for flexible automated market makers. Typical AMMs just have two tokens inside of one liquidity pool, which can lead to fractured liquidity across the many pairs in DeFi. With Balancer, you can access the full power of multiple tokens inside of one single AMM, which unlocks an entirely new playing field of possibility. This makes Balancer an awesome building block for so many different use cases. Balancer pools can make asset indices, but instead of paying fees to portfolio managers, Balancer lets you collect the fees from traders who use your portfolio for liquidity. Additionally, Balancer smart pools can be programmed to have properties that change according to predetermined rules, such as changing the swap fees based on market conditions, or even liquidity bootstrapping pools, which can help you launch and distribute your token with day one liquidity. At Bankless, we use a liquidity bootstrapping pool to sell our BAP t-shirts to much success. V2 brings powerful new features that makes your money work even harder for you. In V2, idle tokens are capable of generating yield in DeFi without sacrificing liquidity in the pool using asset managers. Balancer's vault architecture lets you trade between Balancer pools at a fraction of the cost versus other platforms, and you can even take advantage of dynamic fees, which automatically adapt to changing market conditions. Balancer's mission is to become the primary source of liquidity in DeFi by providing the most flexible and powerful platform for asset management and decentralized exchange. Dive into the Balancer pools at app.balancer.fi. Have you heard of Ernest Becker?
He's a
philosopher, cultural anthropologist. He wrote this book called The Denial of Death. And he talked about people fill it, are born with a void in their life, and their mission in life is to fill it. And like, it really depends on how you fill it. And that'll dictate how your life is. The denial of death is like this theory of like, it's a very wide ranging theory, but like, it talks a lot about tribalism and all and meaning and ascribing symbols to things. And he talks about like organized religions or like public service towards like governments or sports teams or any sort of like entity, right? Like, so the average sports team, pick your favorite sport, in baseball, soccer, football, whatever, like the team itself is beyond the person, right? Like, it's an organization that like it existed before you were born, it'll exist after you die. Same with your religion, same with your country, same with your, like, insert your tribe here, right? And so like the theory is that like humans have this insatiable desire to build symbols that will outlast their own death in order to seek mortality, right? Because we all have this fear of death. It's embedded in our, like, our subconsciousness. And when you wake up in the morning, you can't think of like, oh, I really don't want to die, therefore I will go do this, right? Like, that's just too paralyzing. But like, still you are motivated is the theory. Still you are motivated by that conscious, subconscious desire of denying death. But you also know that you're going to die. So what then do you do with your life? And so the people, according to this theory, find long-term sustainable symbols to be a part of, right? Mm-hmm. And like, to me, this answers so many questions as to why like crypto is so tribal. Like, the whole cryptocurrency revolution is about building systems that can last way longer than we can even imagine, right? Like, not centuries, but like multiple centuries. Fuck, maybe even 1,000 years, right? And so like, when you consider that we are on like the bootstrapping phases of systems that might be literally 1,000 years old, like, no shit, like, you wake up every single day and you look at Ethereum and you're like, I need to consume everything, right? Like, we're all trying to deny death by building and being a part of this symbol that can last for forever, right? The whole point about Ethereum is it will outlast nation states. The whole point about these things is that they are going to be the longest lasting systems that humans have ever generated, right? Like, including religion, or at least, you know, religion morphs and change shape so that the symbols change. But, you know, the point still stands, right? And so like, there is immense amount of opportunity to like latch on to like this symbol that can last like far, like more generations than we can count. And so like that, I think that's why there's always like this why crypto is so tribal, why there's so much like bottom up community engagement, why some of the deepest core Ethereum like developers, like the people on the Geth team, are so like, they kind of feel like some of the deepest, like, you know, Ethereum, like religious, like deep, like religious people, right? In the sense that like, they don't care about profit. They don't care about social media clout. They just want to build the damn system, right? They just want to build because they know that the thing that they are building can help them deny death because they built it in the first place.
Yeah, I mean, I never heard that kind of like theory before, or that kind of like the way you've put it. That's actually super interesting, because I think it comes back to permanence as well, right? Like, these systems are permanent systems, like especially the ones with decentralization guarantees, where you can be or at least have relative confidence that in 100 years, this is going to be around and this is going to have a permanent record of everything that's ever happened on the chain. And, you know, if it comes to like crypto, your account balance is going to be correct in 100 years or whatever. Or like whoever you pass down your crypto to, they're going to be able to have that in 100 years and no one has been able to take that away from you. No one has been able to alter it. No one has been able to change history. Could you imagine if we had like a permanent record throughout the last 1,000 years of history, instead of etching it into like stones and things like that, we put it on this system. And yes, okay, like history can be rewritten, or like the history is written by the victors. And yeah, exactly. There's different interpretations, but at least we have that on there, and it's a permanent system through time where we can look back on it, dig the data out, and kind of like do this, I guess, chain archaeology, as some people have called it before, which I think is really cool, and have relative certainty that this is the truth, right? This is actually what happened here. It didn't get altered by any central party to say something else or to reflect something else. And that is really the crux of it, I think, is that permanence. To your point about like us subconsciously fearing death and wanting to create like permanent systems, so that even when we are gone, everything that we did while we were alive, or at least a lot of the stuff that we did while we were alive, is still there. Like all the stuff that I've done on Ethereum in 1,000 years potentially could still be there, right? All my transactions, everything. Right. I'm long gone. I'm not there anymore. But my history is, like, the history of who I was, doesn't matter how small of a person I am in terms of like how well known I am or not. I'm there. I'm etched into kind of this thing as a permanence thing. And this, I mean, you go through history, look at the people that are like the pharaohs that built like the pyramids, or they built like massive statues to themselves. That they did that because they're like, well, what's the way that I can make myself kind of like immortal through a symbol, to your point. Mm-hmm. And we make ourselves immortal by tying ourselves to a network that we believe can run forever. And whether it does or doesn't is another thing. But I think that's what really attracts me personally to the systems that are actually truly decentralized, is that I know that at least I can have relative certainty that this thing's going to be around in 100, 200, 300 years, whereas a lot of these other things, I don't know that. And I don't know if someone's messing with it or changing it or doing something, exerting central control over it. And I think that's actually the extreme point for Bitcoiners. And that's why they are really, really adverse to any sort of change on the base layer, is because they don't want they don't want kind of anyone being able to change anything. They're happy with the way it is. They're happy with that permanence. And that's fine. But I think I have a bit of a looser kind of, I guess, like approach to it, where I think that you don't, that Bitcoin ossified way too early on in its life. Like, these networks are 10 years old. They're not like, I mean, Ethereum's not 10 years old, but Bitcoin's like, what, 12, 11 years old. They're not 100 years old yet. So ossifying now is probably detrimental to kind of like what you want to build. That's why I'm so interested in Ethereum still, and kind of excited about Ethereum's kind of like changing. But at the same time, they're changing for like the tech upgrades, and they're not changing history. They're not trying to rewrite anything. And technically it could happen, but it hasn't happened. And obviously there's the DAO hack and stuff like that, but that was even earlier on in the life. Like, this is like a year into Ethereum's life. I think we're building systems to last hundreds of years. Let's not ossify them too soon, but let's make sure that we understand that they will eventually ossify at the base layer, and that will be like a permanent record of people. And yeah, I mean, that's a really good way of putting it. I never thought about it like that. And now it all makes sense.
Yeah. I mean, it's also a convenient model to frame like why security on Ethereum is so important, and not only security in terms of like, you know, the specifications as to like node requirements, but also with monetary policy, right? Like, mm-hmm. Bitcoin isn't secure because it actually has kind of a broken monetary policy. As good as the Bitcoiners will tell you their monetary policy is, it's also broken in terms mm-hmm. of long-term sustainability on the blockchain, right? And like, the reason why like Ethereans have been always criticizing things like Binance Smart Chain is that like, cool, you just increase centralization, you increase state bloat, like you reduce sustainability, And so, like, there's actually a very, like, there's that one equation about, like, the sweet spot where a planet can be away from a sun. But basically, like, there's a sweet spot about crypto systems that make these things long-term permanent, right? Mm-hmm. And if the point, and the, also, you talked about the pyramids. Ernest Becker, like, one of the greatest example, the first examples he uses is, like, the pyramid. So, good job for tapping into that. But, like, if we want these crypto systems to be permanent, like there's a pretty narrow band of design choices that like Ethereum needs to be inside of that, or like insert your crypto system here. It's got to be inside the band, or else it succumbs to lack of sustainability in monetary policy, or lack of sustainability in just like the network size, right? And so mm-hmm. like this is why Vitalik always talks about like this Goldilocks zone of like design choices, and what he's really talking about is like how do we make this thing exist forever. Right? How do we deny death of the yeah. Ethereum system?
Yeah, and it's funny because like when you point out these issues with Bitcoin sustainability, people say, "Oh, we don't have to worry about that for 10 or 20 years." Like, okay, but you're trying to build a system that's going to last centuries, right? And you're saying that we don't have to worry about it for 10 or 20 years, but
we'll be 40. Like, that's not that old.
Yeah, yeah, and you're also building a culture of not changing anything
right.
through that time. Like, you're building like 20, 30 years worth of culture around no changes happening at the right. base layer. I don't know. I don't see that being sustainable. I think it's going to be very hard for them to change anything at that point in time because they've only got a few things they can do. They change the proof of stake, or they do a hybrid proof of stake, right. or they remove the monetary policy, which probably goes hand in hand with that as well. And they have to kind of like issue more coins, or they can take coins from old wallets that haven't moved. But that's like goes against the very ethos right. of Bitcoin in general. So yeah, I mean that falls exactly into kind of why I like Ethereum as well. It's like it's more sustainable in my eyes than even Bitcoin. I actually have more confidence that Ethereum in its kind of like current kind of like form is going to be around in like 20 years or at least kind of like secure in 20 years than I do with Bitcoin, unless Bitcoin was to change. And I know that like Ethereum is not there just yet. We have to go through the merge. And then once the merge is done, really, that is the most sustainable thing because we have like the proof of stake security, and we have the burn to kind of like offset that perpetual issuance. And you know, we've been through this a million times, but that's kind of like why I guess like I'm most interested in Ethereum's kind of like sustainability rather than Bitcoin's. Even though people will say, well, you know, I'm more confident in Bitcoin. It's like I think there's an argument to be had there, but it goes back to like the permanent stuff and kind of like creating systems that outlive us by far. But you know, on that note as well, though, I've noticed a very very funny overlap between people in crypto, in Ethereum specifically, and longevity research and yes. reverse aging, right? Like there is a very, very like uh-huh. clear overlap. And Vitalik has actually funded this research. Right. I think he's donated $10 million to the SANS Institute, probably done other donations. And he's written about, not written about this, but he's got a blog post. I don't know if it's still there, but in his Twitter bio, he had a blog post for a while about like a dragon tyrant. And essentially right. it was a metaphor for, hey, why do we just accept death as a reality? Why not fix death or cure death? Why not treat death like any other disease that we cure? That post had a point. It's like, okay, well, let's do it. And that's why a lot of research is going into this now, where it's like, can we live forever? Not immortal as in nothing can kill us, but can we actually be biologically immortal right. where we can reverse aging? We can stay at like, you know, a certain age, and we can basically extend our lifespans out indefinitely. And I think we can. I actually think it's possible. I don't think it's something that we can't do because we've cured so many other diseases. And really, aging is a disease. When you look at the cellular level, it's just our cells breaking down over time.
You don't die of old age. You die of a disease that you got when you were old.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. And it's because like our bodies are just like not, they can't fight that anymore, right? They can't function as they used to. So whether that's making our organic bodies, getting it to the point where we can reverse aging for long enough until we just basically transfer our consciousness into like a machine that can obviously live forever. You can just keep changing the parts of the machine. You can keep changing the parts of a human body, but eventually it gives out. There's diminishing right. returns to that. You can't just keep replacing every part. Whereas with a machine, you can. And you know, as long as you have the human consciousness in it, you can keep changing parts. But it's also the same thing of reverse aging. Can we basically keep pushing back the date of our death to effectively like being immortal? And there's philosophical questions about that. It's like, is that actually desirable? Can society survive with a population that, with no turnover? Because right. at the moment, the way society progresses is that usually the older people are more kind of like conservative. They hate change. They're the ones that are kind of like at the ruling class, but they die off. And then you have like a new ruling class come in, and that's how society progresses through time. And that's how
the wheel
kind of like. Yeah, exactly. It's basically the wheel. But can that continue with effectively kind of like biologically immortal kind of population? And, you know, what does society look like in that world? So, but yeah, that overlap between Ethereans and longevity research right. is not, I mean, that is definitely just because we're obsessed with permanent systems. We're obsessed with the long term. Mm. We're obsessed with the very long term. Like long term being 10 years is normally what you're talking about. I'm talking centuries. Like we're obsessed with this sort of stuff. And that's what a lot of people that I talk to are thinking about. They're not thinking about any of the day-to-day stuff.
Right.
Even though it's tempting to. Mm-hmm.
I do know that Vitalik does actually take like some of these supplements, I guess you would call them, that longevity mm-hmm. researchers have like kind of given the unofficial like green check mark on. Mm-hmm. And so like he not only is he a believer mm-hmm. and funder in this thing, but like he's actually taking like meaningful steps of his own like, you know, well-being to attempt to get to living forever, right? And I can't remember when I was talking to him about this, but he talked about like, well, you know, if these things that I'm doing now kick out my life by like 20 to 30 years, well, then that just gives me 20 to 30 years of more room for like more meaningful innovations to come out. And so like maybe I'll go from like 80, die at 80 to die at like 110. But like between now and then, we'll think of even more things. And then that will buy me more time for people to think of even more things, which will buy me even more time. And then it's just some process of like kicking the can down the road, and you just kick the can down the road forever and find mm-hmm. ways to like never actually have to like leave the can behind, right? You just keep on kicking the can. And so there's some sort of joke or juxtaposition here about like Vitalik, the guy that designed the everlasting economic system, and then also like figured out a way to live forever so he can just ride this economic system into like the sunset, which is mm-hmm. which would be a phenomenal story.
Uh-huh. Yeah, and the beautiful thing of that is that Vitalik doesn't have control over this system that he made, right? Like he can live for centuries, and so can this system, but he doesn't have any control over it. He can't exert central control, which is actually amazing. I love that. The fact that imagine both these systems, imagine Ethereum and Vitalik lived to be 1,000 years old. Everyone knows that Vitalik created it, right? He's etched into that forever. But like he has no control over it. So it's just kind of like this thing that he set out into the world that he can't even, I mean, he at that point, he probably doesn't even have any influence over it. He's probably working on something else. Who knows? I mean,
his social clout like, would be absolutely insane, but other than
yes,
that, yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, but other than that, you know, the system itself would be, if it works as kind of like we want it to work, would be still fully decentralized and secure and stuff like that. So yeah, it's kind of funny when you think about that. I mean, these are definitely like very deep philosophical things and stuff that may not be answered for like 50 years to come. We don't know what the world's going to look like. But I mean, yeah, I think people are doing different things to kind of like extend their life already. I know that you fast, and that's been kind of like there's a lot of research done into that that shows mm-hmm. that it could extend your life potentially. And
it's cool. You know, it's a wash with the beer that I drink, so call it even.
Yeah. But that's the thing. Like I try to take a little bit more care of my health, trying to kind of like lose extra weight if I put it on, or try to exercise more. It's kind of been hard with COVID and the lockdowns and things like that. But generally, you know, living a healthy life is not a bad thing. Like that's even if it doesn't extend your lifespan, even if you get hit by a bus tomorrow, who cares? Like living a healthy life means that you just feel better overall anyway, which I think should be the goal for everyone. But generally, if you're trying to extend your life out, yeah, there's a lot of experimental stuff you can do. As you said, like there's some supplements and stuff. There's fasting. There's a lot of experimental stuff you can do. But if you do it now, you need to kind of be content with the risks of doing it, being right. that, you know, you may kill yourself in the process.
Might have jumped the gun too soon on some of the things. Like, oh, it turns out that wasn't the right one. Not the right experiment.
Yeah. It turns out that gave me cancer. It turns out that made my heart give out, right? Yeah.
There's all those sorts Steve Jobs ate a fruit-only diet, and turns out he gave himself cancer for that, on the quest of like living for curing immortality.
Exactly. So there's going to be like a lot of that happening. So, and then eventually, you know, maybe in 100 years, we solve this and everyone born then gets to experience the joys of everyone else's sacrifices through through time, which is exactly what we get to enjoy right now. The millions of people that came before us that sacrificed their lives, whether that be in wars or in clinical experiments or dying from diseases that we eventually cured and viruses and stuff like that. We all just kind of like survive based on previous generations. And I think it's a scary thought at, because, you know, we could be the generation that has to be the one that suffers the most pain for people to get to this enlightened live forever stage. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, it's kind of like cool because we get to be part of it. We get to be like etched into history. And it goes back to, I guess, your kind of discussion, what you were saying about like having these monuments, having these things exist that live longer than us to kind of remember us, I guess.
Totally. Well, Anthony, for a conversation that started with like, how the hell do you have so much energy to put into the Daily Gway? Like, well, I think we actually might have found our answer.
Exactly. I mean, yeah, I mean, this, the fun thing about these, I think these layer zeros that you're doing is that it doesn't have to be just about crypto. It can be about anything and the conversation can go anywhere, which I always really like. Because, I mean, people who follow me and probably listen to all the stuff, they probably only know me for Ethereum and crypto stuff. But I definitely do a lot of other stuff outside of that and read a lot of other things and try to keep up with a lot of other stuff. But the overlap between, yeah, I mean, like, I think it's not just like longevity research, but anything on the bleeding edge. Like, I'm definitely interested in like space stuff that's happening there and kind of like trying to loosely keep up with it and space travel. I'm definitely interested in just like all kinds of new advances in medicine. And I actually thought it was really cool how fast we got like a vaccine for COVID, like the fastest ever. Mm-hmm. I'm just super interested in that, but like, it's kind of hard to keep up with everything.
Don't say so we, like, brother. You're in Australia.
Oh God! Yeah. hey, no, I think an Australian came up with the AstraZeneca vaccine, or at least one of the people that came up with it. So,
oh, really? Good for you.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. So that's cool. But yeah, I just generally like I try to keep like a cursory kind of view of everything happening, but there's just too much happening, man. Like trying to keep up with Ethereum alone is like a more than a full time job now. So yeah.
All right, man. Well, I definitely appreciate your time and coming and chatting with me on Layer Zero.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thanks for having me, man. I'm sure people will hear my voice on the live streams that we do or any further like bankless stuff that we do. Probably in a few months when we do another kind of like bull case for ETH, like we always do, right? Maybe ETH is at 10K, who knows?
But, we already got two of them scheduled, one for a couple months and then one for 6 months. Right? They're already on the menu.
Yeah, exactly. Maybe Eric will join us again next one. Like, he missed the last one, but yeah.
I'm sure he was eating the popcorn while he was watching it.
Yeah. But I think he's more bullish these days, so maybe. But anyway, yeah, thanks.
Only
for
on
me,
JPEGs.
Yeah, exactly. Oh man, cool.
All right, well, I'm getting a little bit loopy because it's coming into my bedtime. So Anthony, great having you on Layer Zero, sir. You're a testament to Ethereum, and thank you for everything that you do.
Thank you.